Now, a new series from the New York Times editorial board is taking a closer look at the way pregnant women are being treated today in the American legal system. Over 8 editorials, they look at a trend of granting more rights and protections to fetuses and how that trend is affecting the rights of women. Lauren Kelly is a member of the New York Times editorial board, where she focuses on women and reproductive rights. She spearheaded the project at the Times and was part of the team that reported and edited the series. Lauren, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What got you and your colleagues started on this path of covering laws meant to protect fetuses and how that affects women?
Sure. So this is a topic that I have covered for some time, for about a decade. But I think for us on the board, it really became an urgent issue, really the moment that Anthony Kennedy's retirement from the Supreme Court news was announced. Really immediately, it was clear to me and some of my colleagues that the road ahead of us is going to be, you know, paved with a lot of debate about abortion, and that it was likely that whoever Trump did nominate to the Supreme Court would likely lead to Roe being rolled back, if not entirely overturned.
But already in the United States, even under Roe versus Wade, there have been a lot of changes in the laws over the years, many of them involved in protecting fetuses, the unborn. It depends on who you talk to, which language they use. What kind of laws have we seen at the state level on this issue?
Sure. So there have been many hundreds of anti-abortion bills that have been introduced, and I believe it's something like 400 that have been passed in recent years. And, you know, those really run the gamut. You know, there might be waiting periods before a woman can have an abortion. There might be various regulations on abortion clinics. For instance, they might have to widen their hallways or do other sorts of work before they can open their clinics again. And then, you know, in addition to that, there are these what are called fetal homicide laws, which are a lot about a lot of the focus of our series. 38 states and actually federally, there is a law for this as well, have these laws right now. They treat a fetus as a potential crime victim that is separate and apart from the woman who is carrying it. And so that opens up, you know, all sorts of questions about the rights that those women will still have.
Right. You have a chart, actually, that kind of a flow chart, and you say this has happened in more than one state where initially a crime, maybe an attempted homicide, results in a miscarriage, the death of a fetus. Laws are passed to punish people who do such a thing, but then in many cases are applied to pregnant women themselves.
Yeah, that's right. You know, these are somewhat understandable circumstances. I mean, you hear about some of these crimes and they really are absolutely tragic and horrific. You know, a pregnant woman being murdered is absolutely awful. And you can understand the desire to bring justice to somebody, you know, for also killing that fetus. The problem is, of course, then women's rights end up getting taken away. And so you really have to look at an appropriate legal response to those sorts of crimes.
We're talking to Lauren Kelly, member of the New York Times editorial board, about a series on largely about laws intended to protect fetuses from harm and the impact that's having on the rights of women, pregnant women in particular. Lauren, what kind of crimes, what kind of cases have you seen where women are charged perhaps after a miscarriage?
Sure. Here's one example. There's a woman who fell down the stairs. She tripped over, she already had a child or a couple of children, and she tripped over one of their toys and fell down the stairs, ended up losing the pregnancy, and was accused then of endangering her children. Even though falling down the stairs is not a crime, if, you know, I am not pregnant right now, and if I were to fall down the stairs, I would not be charged with anything, you know, other than whatever, you know, medical care I needed from falling down the stairs. But if you are pregnant, suddenly these things can become crimes. And those are the sorts of, you know, tragic situations that we looked at in the series.
And you write about efforts maybe to police pregnant women, charges if a woman was in a car accident, not wearing a seatbelt and she was pregnant, women using drugs, legal or illegal.
Yes, that's right. All of those things have happened. The car accident incident is another tragic one. A woman in New York was in a car accident. She was not wearing her seatbelt. It turns out she may have been at fault in this case and hit two people in another car, and those people passed away. She also lost her pregnancy, but she was charged ultimately for losing, for the death of her fetus, and not for the deaths of the two adults who were driving the other car.
So at the core of this is a philosophical issue, a rise, as you describe it, of people passing these laws for fetal protection, saying that a fetus, an unborn child, is the moral equivalent of an adult human being. And you're worried at a root level about what this does to the rights of women.
Yes, that's right. You know, I think with this series, one thing we really wanted to make clear was that, yes, the future of Roe v. Wade is at stake. We don't know what's going to happen there. But we wanted to make it clear that this is really a broader issue than just about abortion. Abortion rights are very important, of course. But really, this is about bodily autonomy very broadly. And whether or not Roe is overturned, I think we can expect in the coming years and possibly even months to see a proliferation of more of these laws rolling back women's rights.
And you pointed toward, I don't remember if it was Justice Kennedy himself, but one of the Supreme Court justices saying if fetal personhood becomes the law of the land, that would in effect render Roe versus Wade obsolete. Is that right?
Yes, it wasn't Kennedy, but that was in the Roe decision itself. And that is absolutely correct.
We're talking about a series from the New York Times editorial board called A Woman's Rights. It looks at the fetus personhood movement and how it's affecting the rights of women. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about a fetal personhood laws? Do you think there should be protections in those kind of laws so that pregnant women don't face prosecution, potentially jail time, like some of the stories we've heard? Do you think it's a good idea to have specific laws protecting the well-being of fetuses of unborn children? Have you yourself been in a legal situation for similar issues? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about a New York Times series looking at laws intended to protect fetuses and their impact, those laws' impact on pregnant women and their rights. Lauren Kelly is with us. She's a member of the New York Times editorial board who focuses on women and reproductive rights. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do some of these stories we've heard concern you? Do you think prosecuting pregnant women in the event of a miscarriage, saying that they were negligent in some way, is the right or wrong approach? What do you think of the idea of these kind of legal protections? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren, before we go to our callers, one of your pieces looked at a case where the government was trying to protect fetuses from women, the crack baby scare of the 1980s, mm-hmm. based on, it turned out, faulty science. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. That piece we felt very strongly about doing because, as you said, this sort of myth of quote unquote crack babies was really propagated a lot at the time by media organizations. And we really felt it was important for us to make clear that the New York Times was one of those organizations. And, you know, really, a lot of these myths about these, again, quote unquote, crack babies, you know, some of the myths were that these children would grow up to be predators, that they would, you know, be criminals, that they would be damaged for life. And it turns out that science and those, you know, those articles that were written, a lot of it was just not true. And, you know, I think that I am certain that our reporters at the time were, you know, acting in good faith and doing their best. But it just turns out that none of that was correct, or large amounts of it were incorrect. So we just felt it was really important to address that and help set the record straight, especially because one of our stories deals with the opioid epidemic and a woman who is addicted to opioids. And we just thought it was important to make clear how that crack era myth really helped set the stage for some of the policies and the social attitudes that we have today about pregnant women and mothers who are addicted to drugs.
Let's go to our callers now. Michael is with us in Johnson Creek. Michael, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Michael?
I was actually thinking about for what your caller said about the story that she's doing or whatever. My thing is that I'm pro-choice. I am against late-term abortions. But one of the things I think that people aren't also thinking about is how about after the baby is born? If a mother, let's say, she wanted to get an abortion but she can't and she doesn't want to keep the child, she gives up the child to adoption, well, who's going to adopt the baby? Who's going to take care of it? Who's going to foot the bill for that kind of stuff? And then how is the child going to turn out in the end?
Michael, thanks for the call. Michael worried about taking care of kids after they're born as much as abortion itself, Lauren.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is that I completely agree. And, you know, women's health care should really include, in my view, a whole range of things from abortion care to prenatal care to postnatal care. And, of course, care for those infants after they're born, of course.
Michael, thanks for the call. We'll go to Matt, also in Johnson Creek. Matt, hi.
Hello. My question would be, has anyone thought about the legal ramifications of the actual birthday when we apply personhood to a fetus, i.e. does somebody get to vote now at 17 years, 3 months? Because many of our laws, actually, the crux of them is the actual birthday. So how are we going to treat that if we treat a in utero fetus as a person with rights? Thank you.
Matt, thanks for the call. Any thoughts, Lauren?
Yeah, it's actually a really wonderful question. That really gets to the heart of some of the really slippery legal and almost philosophical questions that arise when we start treating fetuses as people from the moment of conception. There actually was a case pretty recently where a man in Kansas who had been charged with statutory rape of a teenage girl, his lawyers tried to argue in court, unsuccessfully as it turns out, that the girl was 9 months older than she actually is based on Kansas's personhood law. Again, they were unsuccessful in that, as they should have been. But, you know, it does raise questions, and some of them are quite disturbing.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Lauren Kelly, member of the New York Times editorial board, where she focuses on women and reproductive rights. Looking at a series there, looking at mostly at fetal protection laws and their implications for the rights of women. We'll go to another caller now. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi. Yeah, my comment's probably a little bit off topic, but it is related. You know, my biggest concern is I have no idea when life begins, so I think 3 months or 4 months for having an abortion is fine. But I want to know what the guests' feelings are about why should a man be able to forego his parental rights and not have to pay child support? Provide him the same choice that a woman has. Would the guests support that?
Steve, thanks for the call. Lauren?
You know, I'm not even sure that I can answer that. That was not a big focus of this series.
All right. Thanks for the call, Steve. We'll go to Sean on the line in Wausau. Sean, hi.
Hi, Mike and Lauren. Thank you for your time. I was kind of curious on where do you kind of draw the line? Of course, I'd want women's rights to be protected as well as unborn or, you know, even after child's born's rights. Where is the line drawn? Kind of like a previous caller, it's dated.
Mike, thanks for the call. So are there valid protections? Are there valid ways to, offer fetal protection laws, Lauren, without endangering rights of women?
You know, it's a really great question. And I think that legal scholars can have a really good faith debate about where that line is and should be. I think the reality right now, though, is that, again, the assault is really on women's rights right now. So I think that there is just a lot of work that needs to be done to get us up to the point where women are really seen as full human beings in the eye of the law, to be honest.
Now, every now and then, this issue comes to the forefront, usually with a Supreme Court nomination hearings, but it doesn't seem like abortion rights, pro-life and pro-choice groups are front and center like they have been at some stages in the past. Are you concerned that this issue is in some ways under the radar in a way it hasn't been in recent decades?
Well, I will say that while Brett Kavanaugh was sort of, you know, rising up to the Supreme Court, it felt like there was quite a lot of sort of discussion about this issue. It does tend to sort of fall away when those news cycles are, you know, sort of no longer in the headlines. I certainly do hope that people keep paying attention to this, though, because there are stories every single day, positive and negative, in terms of where reproductive rights are headed. And, you know, frankly, I think a big reason for that we produced this series is because we wanted people to realize that. We wanted people to realize that, you know, in many cases, women already are vulnerable and their rights are more at risk now than they ever have been. And, you know, we want people to keep paying attention.
Yeah, since the passage of Roe versus Wade, I've seen some pro-choice advocates over the years say this is maybe something that people, younger people in particular, may just take for granted and not think about. Do you think that that is changing, that maybe younger voters are watching this issue more closely?
I do think that's the case. And what gives me hope is, you know, you see all of the young women who are running for office, often on very strong pro-choice platforms. You know, you see young people flocking to the voting booth. You know, you look at, for instance, the Women's March, tons and tons of young women. You know, I really do think that it's starting to become a reality for younger women who might have taken this for granted, perhaps, in the past.
We'll leave it there for now. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Lauren Kelly with the New York Times editorial board. She was with us to talk about a new opinion series there called A Woman's Rights, which looks at how women are impacted by laws granting rights to fetuses.